I'm Stephen Price.
Hello, I'm Cara Githens.
This is The Innkeepers, a podcast by Sanctuary Inn. At Sanctuary Inn, we believe we are called to equip, refresh, and restore God's global workers.
On this podcast, we will be interviewing guests who have much to teach us about the many facets of missionary care. Let's learn together and be encouraged to press on in the work God has given each one of us to do.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hello, this is Cara.
And we'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Innkeepers podcast. Cara, tell us a little bit about our guest today.
Yes, today we have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Laura May Gardner. She has served with Wycliffe Bible Translators and SIL for over 60 years.
Yeah.
She spent most of that time serving with her husband, Dick Gardner, and they together served in roles as Bible translators. They did candidate assessment, trainers, counselors. They were the directors of the International Counseling Department for Wycliffe for a season, and also the creator of Member Care for Missions within their organization. At one point, she was the International Vice President for Personnel, and on it goes.
Yeah, she has quite
the extensive. She's worn all the hats.
Yeah, quite the extensive resume.
Yes, she and her husband trained and consulted in 65 different countries, and she also wrote a book called Healthy, Resilient, and Effective in Cross-Cultural Ministry. We will have that in the show notes for you.
Yeah.
So she and her husband have served together for many years, and just recently her husband passed away, and so she is continuing to serve on her own right now. She's an adjunct professor at Columbia International University, and she is a wealth of information and understanding on the topic of missionary care.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Welcome to another episode of the Innkeepers podcast. And today we have the opportunity and privilege to interview Dr. Laura May Gardner. And Laura May is known by so many people in the missionary care. So Dr. Gardner, welcome to our podcast today. And would you just start by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Of course, and thank you for asking. My name, of course, is Laura May Gardner, and I am a longtime missionary parent. My husband and I have two sons, and our field work especially was in translation in southern Mexico. And then we were asked during the summers to go to the University of Washington and be part of screening new candidates. So that was a very insightful time for us. During that screening time, our biographies came to the attention of the leadership of Wycliffe, and they suggested that we move ahead and get counseling training and degrees. And we did that when our translation was finished. So both Dick and I have master's degrees, and I have a doctorate. And our primary goal is to support and care for and interact with God's people who are involved in missions. And it's been a very fruitful and good time. The privilege also was of that of being a parent, because it's one thing to be single people on a field or to be a childless couple, because that you're very mobile and things go nicely usually. And so having a couple of boys made us parents and probably more gracious toward parents.
Yeah.
Our boys are fine and wonderful Christian men who are married to wonderful Christian women. So, and we now have 9 grandchildren. Mm-hmm. We've had some difficult days in the past few years in that my husband became a little unsteady on his feet. And we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You're unsteady, but otherwise you're very healthy." We came home, and that evening he went out to watch the stars. As he turned to come in, he fell. But he didn't tell me he'd fallen. And he came in, we had a meal, and we're getting ready for the end of the day and getting ready for bed. And he said, could I rub his back? It was hurting. And as he bent forward in his office chair, I noticed blood on the back of his office chair. And I said, where did this come from? And he said, well, I fell and I hit my head on the edge of the curb of the porch. But it wasn't a severe blow, it seemed. There wasn't a lot of blood, and I cleaned it up and it was fine. And we got ready for bed. And he was really hurting. So he spent the night in the Kleiner and I was near him and I couldn't wake him in the morning. And so we called the 911. So as of about 14 months ago, I am a widow. Thank you. And that has been very, very different because we had 61 years of a very good marriage of supportive and harmonious ministry. So that's one aspect of our story. I think it has helped me to understand death, although that's not a new thing to missionaries. So that's a little piece of it. The other piece I want to mention as part of my background involvement. We led the counseling department for Wycliffe for 12 years and really enjoyed that. We built it from 11 therapists to 22 and did a lot of traveling to work with the field people and with administration. And then the organization came to us and said, we have been told, mandated by our international board to develop member care. And we don't have anyone to do that. We want you two to leave your counseling role and develop member care for missions, and particularly for Wycliffe and SIL.
Yeah.
That was concurrent with our own feeling that as much as we enjoyed counseling and the provision of therapy, there has to be an intermediate role between caring administration and formal therapy. And that intermediate role was nicely identified for us as member care.
Okay.
And it made so much sense.
Yeah.
Because it's contrastive with therapeutic counseling. It's not administrative because we have no authority to tell people what to do. But it's alongside helping to diagnose all the things that member care can do. And that has been a good fit for us.
Good.
So during our 61 years, we've traveled to about 65 countries. Mm. We've helped 35 other organizations with these things, either a sudden crisis or an evacuation or sudden death on the field or bringing a whole group home for debriefing as a group. It has been a rich and wonderful ministry. And I'm delighted with what you're doing because I think you're doing something very similar and very meaningful and very, yes, useful and necessary.
Yeah. It sounds like God just kind of walked you from the field work to the counseling work and then just opened up the door for you to do the member care.
That's right. That's exactly right, Steve.
Oh. Well, today, the focus of our conversation is going to be what is missionary care? And you started to touch on what that is. But could you give us perhaps a definition of what you would say member care is?
Sure. In my book, I quote the definition that Global Member Care Network developed in 2008. And I was part of the board of that organization. It said, it is doing whatever it takes within reason to ensure that our workers feel cared for and supported by their agency and church, that they have the resources they need to work effectively and to care well for themselves and their family. It is comprehensive. It includes the ongoing preparation, equipping, and empowering of missionaries for effective and sustainable life, ministry and work in the gospel. That was developed some time ago, and then MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship, developed their own definition. And it's much, much smaller, much shorter. The purpose of member care within an organization is twofold: to prepare, equip, strengthen, and empower staff for effective and sustainable life and service, and to promote a spiritually healthy and caring, productive fellowship, thereby living out Christ's example in daily life. It has seemed to me that we are at the edge of having to come up with a better definition. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite willing to engage with somebody to work on a better definition. I don't think this one is flawed, and I don't think it can be set aside, but we need something more timely for today's workers.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that rings a bell with you, but COVID has changed almost everything.
Mm.
And the population, the Christian population as well as secular population, is very, very different. And I think we need to have a response for them.
Okay. That is a valid point there, that we have had an adjustment in terms of how we see the world. And so we need to adjust our response in terms to even missionary care. What are we doing to address that? Yeah. So if I may ask, who would then be responsible for missionary care?
That's a great question. I think all members are responsible to care for one another. It's not by accident that the New Testament is filled with 55 one another verses. So we have a mutual compassionate attentiveness to our fellow colleagues. So that's one thing. I think additionally, leaders and administrators have a responsibility to care well for their people. It isn't that they leave their job and call themselves member care workers. It's that they carry out their administrative role in a caring and compassionate way. The third people who are part of this mandated care provider, and that is designated skilled people. The primary skills being life experience, insight, kindness, good reputation, has the confidence of the membership, skilled in interpersonal relationships with a substantial, successful cross-cultural ministry, good assessment skills. And here's a little formula. Member care people, this is what my last category there, need to be insightful. They will come and they will see a problem. Either they will go somewhere or the couple will come back. And a little fourfold diagnostic set of questions. What is going on here? What is really going on here?
Wow.
Yeah.
What should be going on here? And how can I help? And they many times come for a problem, and they'll stay long enough to determine if they can trust us.
Yeah.
And once they think they can trust you, they will begin to open up. You know, in other words, you won't ask these four questions right away. But in other words, I think member care needs to be pervasive. It needs to be widespread in the responsibility for doing it. But we also need people like you two. People who are skilled and experienced, who know how to be insightful and maybe a superficial diagnosis. But we need people like you. Mm-hmm. We can't expect the whole body of the mission team to do all the caring one another needs.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, I think most organizations probably have member care in their organization right now.
Right.
But then some people sometimes want to know the distinction between member care and counseling. So how do you help them distinguish between counseling and membership?
That's a great question, because there is a difference. At one point when we developed MemberCure, and it was so well received, people loved it, counseling began to call itself MemberCure, which, because it was more compatible and less diagnostic. And that's not right. Counseling is highly academic, with policies and procedures designed for the protection of the organization and providers, ideally delivered by knowledgeable and skilled people who know how to engage with people in a therapeutic way. I think most Americans know very little about mission life and missionary challenges, but counselors ideally should be very well trained, because we're seeing some very complex things on, as people come back from the field where they have experienced trauma. So, and there are several distinctives between these two. Counseling is academic, it is therapeutic, it needs to be delivered by very well-trained people, ideally trained in the scripture as well as in psychology. And member care is informal, relational, initiating, caring, and coming alongside, and often is on site, but not always. Mm-hmm. People can come to your center for mission for care. Uh-huh. So the problem is these two bodies of care ought to work together. Yes. But sometimes they are in competition, and they don't need to be. Usually, a therapist won't take initiative to track somebody down and say, you guys have a problem. I'm concerned about your marriage or the health of your children, whatever. Usually, they will wait for somebody to seek them out. Not always, but member care can take initiative. There's a freedom that goes with member care that allows us to engage with somebody's life and enter in and make a difference.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see the difference there. I'm trained as a counselor, but I work as a missionary care provider here, not as a therapist, intentionally, because I see that difference and that need for the distinction between the two roles. We do life together. We eat meals together. Our kids play together. We do life on life in community here.
Sure.
And that is how we're a piece in member care, as well as the debriefing time that I spend with them.
Sure.
And so as a therapist, that's not what you do. It's more contained and academic, as you were saying.
And many times the counselor withdraws from the social life of the body, and they sit in their office and wait until somebody comes because they're professional. And one of the planks in therapeutic counseling is you can't have dual relationships.
Yeah.
Well, we have to have dual relationships if we're going to minister to people, yeah, either in a small group, a small branch, a small body, or right there. You probably see people across the dining table, right, that you can't say no dual relationships. You're here. I'm here. I'm your helper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's something that we've actually very deliberately gone towards, more the member cares, as opposed, we're not opposed to counseling in any way, shape, or form, but it's more about a relationship that all of our guests can have that freedom to interact with a care coordinator as opposed to a counselor.
Sure. I do think there should be harmony.
Yeah.
We're not in competition.
No.
And actually, a good therapist can be a resource for member care.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we may not know what's going on here. Or is this a temporary problem? And we need to have in our array of resources some really good therapists.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We wholeheartedly agree.
Yes. And referrals is definitely one of the number one things I do.
I bet it is, Cara.
Yes. So if a missionary is struggling and they come to us or someone else who provides member care, and it's from your definition, it's very holistic, and it could be we're all a part of the care, really, essentially.
Sure.
Who touches the life of a missionary can be a part of missionary care. Mm-hmm. So who's responsible to see those red flags and step in and help? How does that get handled?
That depends on where the information comes from. And we both know that sometimes administrators don't know what to do with what they see. And so they will send somebody possibly to you. We said, we don't know what's going on here, but here's what we see. And that it's helpful, but very, very challenging for you. So all you can do is to develop a relationship and get acquainted with these people and see if what you see harmonizes with what the administrator saw. Mm-hmm. Ideally, the administrator would take the courage to speak to the problem on site, on the field. This is what I see. I think you need help because I think it's going to get worse and I want to get help for you. Yeah, and I'm going to send you to see Cara and Steve. And I'm going to send this letter along with you so that they know that we care for you and this is what we see and we want them to be helpful to you. That's ideal. That doesn't always happen.
Uh-huh.
So how the person gets the help they need partly depends on why they sought you out. If they sought you out, it's for some good reason. And it may take them a little bit of time to develop confidence in you so they can say, we came here because we were tired and exhausted. Mm-hmm. But underneath all of that, our teenage daughter is anorexic, mm-hmm. and we don't know what to do.
Mm.
You know, so here you've got a counseling problem, but it came to light from the people.
Yeah.
You can handle that.
Yeah.
So is that what you asked me?
Yeah. And I think too, it'd be helpful to understand from a church perspective, what if a church sees something? How would you suggest they handle it?
I think relationships between you and the church is a good thing. And I appreciate churches. We're their representative and we report back to them and they control our money, but they're not very good diagnosticians.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find out what is it you see and have you talked to this family about that? And the church needs to be part of the equation because they'll care for people. At the same time, I don't think they're a very good diagnosing things they see. So they need to describe them behaviorally.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't give it a label yet. What caused you to say that?
Uh-huh.
So, and then because you have more information than the church probably, you can say, they'll probably say, these people walk around like they're shell-shocked. Well, you know better than maybe the church. They've just come out of a dangerous situation during which they were evacuated and had to leave everything behind, and life makes no sense to them.
Right.
So you will be able to help.
Yeah.
Because you both have field experience and the church can't.
Uh-huh.
There's no way they can enter into that kind of trauma.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, but what I'm hearing is that a partnership between the church, the agency, organizations like us can partner together and all be a piece of the member care puzzle.
You are so right. And that's ideal, Cara. But it really would be helpful if that were the case. The church may have a counseling office. So they may feel they can do all of the help that's needed, but it needs to be a partnership because the church needs to feel like this couple is healthy and has been helped, have some strategies in place, is ready to return to the field. So who determines readiness to return to service?
Good question.
the team.
Yeah.
You will have a say in their readiness to return. The church probably should have a say. If they have seen things that are so serious and they seem unresolved, they should be able to describe that. And the organization needs to have a say too. If they have sent somebody to you for help, they need to know that person has received help. At one point, somebody was sent home to see me to get help, and no specifics were given to me and no specifics were given to the person. So the person was on his way to the airport and turned around, and I was sitting in the back seat, and he said, "You know, my organization told me to come and see you while I'm home. I've just seen you." And that's not the point.
No.
That wasn't the kind of seeing we were talking about. Yeah.
That wasn't the kind of seeing they were talking about. No. So,
yeah. So the intentionality of the conversation and the purpose and the meaning.
And the safety. Yeah. All of that. Yeah. That does bring up, well, I'll stop there and you give me your next question.
Maybe we're headed there anyway, but I'm just thinking about member care as a preventative measure where you're developing relationships and opening the door for people to talk to you. But then there's also member care where you happen to be the person that detects a problem or something's been reported to, and then you have something to deal with. Can you kind of talk about both of those roles?
Sure. And you're very right, Steve. It should have both faces. Mm-hmm. It should be preventive. It should be growth inducing. And it may have to be therapeutic as well. If something is preventive, it probably is not a deeply serious situation that can be resolved by confidence in a relationship. And if the person says, my wife tends to depression and I don't know what to do, and here's what we've done, but we're afraid to tell our field administrator because they may send us home, and they come to see you. Well, in a sense, that's preventive, but in another sense, they need professional help. And so the preventive and therapeutic, this one is growth inducing, and of course you will respond and give this person a pathway to help. But a track record needs to be established, and an information flow needs to be established, because the field needs to know. On the other hand, did the person come of their own volition? That makes a difference. Uh-huh. Because if they've come from their own volition, then you're not free to give a report to their organization unless they permit that.
Hmm.
You need to guard that. At the same time, if it seems to you, I am really concerned because this depression is more severe than you think.
Hmm.
It's more than our oldest child leaving for the States, and our family will never be the same again. And that's pretty traumatic. But that will go by. That's not a medical issue.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, it can be a member care issue. But if it's something much more severe, then there needs to be a paper trail. You need to, if you diagnose it, Cara, you need to make a record. And then what to do with the information is something else again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I answered your question.
Yeah, no, we can easily see that a member care person has multiple things that they're doing in their interactions with a missionary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that question about what do we do with information is a valid question. And could you address that? How do we as missionary care providers handle information? You know, because there's limits to confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
How do we move forward, and how do we interact with agencies or churches about these things?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the hardest roles, one of the hardest areas. It's one of the special challenges for memory care people is limits of confidentiality. What are those limits? And we all know, if we're therapists, that there are probably four: danger to self and others, a violation, a legal violation, child abuse, and harm to self. Okay, so some of these things need to be reported. It has seemed to me that when to report and to whom, supposing there are troubled marriages, supposing it's a wayward child, supposing it's a handicapped child, let's supposing it's a five-year-old kid who can't hear. And if you told the parents, this child needs special intervention, medical intervention, that will resolve a change of location, and it could result in a change of assignment. Now, that's not necessarily a therapeutic, and it certainly isn't a punitive thing. It's to get help for the family. Uh-huh. But the information flow needs to be there. So it has seemed to me that violation of the organization's moral conduct standard, if some missionary on the field has molested children, if they have impregnated a Native woman and a child or a pregnancy has resulted, if they have been engaged in pornography, if they have done things that are in violation of the organization's moral conduct standard, that's a tough thing. Mm-hmm. And so somebody comes to you, they've developed confidence in you, and then the story spills out, I have an addiction and I can't handle it. And you're going to have to say, this is a violation of our organization's standards, but you need more help than we can give you in a short term here. And so you need to talk with your administrator, because it will probably involve a change of assignment. You need to go and talk with him. The person will probably say, I don't want to do that. Uh-huh. Then you have a dilemma. I don't think you're free in that case to report on your own. But I think you need to develop some strategies. Yeah. And one of the things I've done is, you know what, in order to get help for you, this administrative person needs to know, I'll go with you. I won't report this on my own, but I'll go with you. And it helps them to own the situation, and it keeps them from lying to you. There have been people known to lie now and then, if it's in their best interest. If they're a danger to themselves and others, that needs to be handled.
Uh-huh.
You know, a suicidal person needs, they cannot be left alone. They cannot be escaped that. And then if their obvious mental health means a change of assignment, we don't have any authority as member care people. We can't change their assignment, but we can say, it seems like it's best for your family, best for your children, to go back to their home country. But we can't tell you to do that. We don't have the authority to do that.
Uh-huh.
But we can support your need. If you go to your administrator, we can support that need to be go back home. Am I making sense? Yeah. So that we need to be very cautious how we handle information about people who come to see us.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, from the things you're saying, the member care person can be so significant in the life of the missionary in helping them, especially if there's something that is a serious situation, they can perhaps help that missionary take the next step that's going to benefit them and their family.
Yeah. Well put, Steve. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Only you said it better.
Yeah, well.
Yes. So often we end up with missionaries in crisis, and it's kind of too hard to turn things around. But we prefer to do preventative care, I think, right?
I do.
What would we do that would be preventative missionary care? instead of just crisis care, which you spelled out some situations that, yeah, sometimes we need to step in those crisis situations.
Sure.
But preventative could be powerful. What would you say are some preventative things?
I think you've already know that debriefing probably heads the list. And crises happen all the time, all over the world. And I've often gone got on site to do debriefing after a traumatic event, either death of a person on the field, either withdrawal from the field under armed force, being evacuated to a neutral location. All of those things have happened, will happen. Those are different kinds of crisis. Supposing a 13-year-old comes home and finds it so hard to integrate with the U.S. society, she takes her own life. Dreadful, dreadful thing to work with suicide. And you can imagine the scope of people who are going to need your help. The family, the friends of the child, the administration, the church. They don't understand the level of despair that would take a kid, cause a kid to take her own life. But it does happen. So marriages break up, violence within the marriage. These are things that we find all sorts of crises with all sorts of impact. And one of the things that I was thinking about, a woman committed suicide, and the supervisor of the center called me and said, we're all going to meet together. I've called everybody together. I want you to come and tell us how to think about this. So I said, sure. And the next morning, I met with a group of several hundred people and tried to help them see this is not a sin. This is the level of despair that drives someone to this event. But this one also had other complexities to it. What I didn't realize was I had asked my counselors to stand around the room and be available to anybody who wanted to talk as they left the room. And one of them was waiting for me. And he said, 18 years ago today, my brother took his own life. Mm-hmm. Never know that. This event uncovers other wounds. Mm-hmm. So helping with this event is probably more helpful than you know. Because there are things underneath that also need to be healed. Am I making sense?
Yeah. And I also see that the member care person could be very significant as they prepare families to transition.
Yes.
Back to the States, back to the field, just helping them. And then especially as their young people are transitioning to university and in their home country. Just all those kinds of things where there's the potential for a crisis, but if we can give someone some skills or some attention or some skills, I know the member care person can play a big role there.
Yes, they can. And you're so right. To send a child home, that's very traumatic for the family and for the child. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things. Sometimes I wonder if the church could be better educated to help in situations of sudden removal from the field or coming home for higher education, something like that. Mm-hmm. Some churches do. Some churches do, but not many.
Okay. I know a very popular word in the mission circles is the word resilient or resiliency. Can you just talk about resiliency and what you understand that to be, and maybe a misunderstanding?
I think that's one of my favorite words, and that's partly why I wrote this book on resilience. So what resilience means is the ability to be stretched and return to normal. Because there is there is an elasticity and a strength of personality that's very informal. You probably wouldn't accept that definition, Cara.
No, I think it's a great definition.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. But there is in the person the ability to cope helpfully with enormous change. And just because it's hard doesn't mean they're not resilient, but it means they can handle great change. Mm. And whenever you have an evacuation of an individual or a family or a group, there's so much loss, so much sadness. And for the people to minister to each other and keep on going, you know, we had to leave Mexico, and our kids, one of our sons were born there, and they loved it, did not want to leave Mexico. And Dick called us together, and he put his arms around us all. He said, "Gang, we're going to be okay. I'm responsible to care for this family, and we're going to be okay." And if Dad said that, that equipped the rest, the kids and me. You know what? We'll be all right. The change doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. Whatever. The government asking some of the people to leave. So I think whatever we can do to encourage people that what we see is a very healthy behavior. Doesn't mean they're not crying, but they are resilient and can come back. But I think we need to watch people like that in 4, 6, 10 months. How are they doing at coming back?
Okay.
Just maybe one of the things you could think of, what are the questions we should ask? Or what initiative should we take? And it wouldn't be a bad idea. Supposing somebody has had to leave their field and it's dreadful. They had to leave everything and there's no ministry in sight. And you meet with them. And then you say, you know what? Let's get together in about 2-3 months and see how you're doing. Mm. You have given them a great gift. Mm. They're not alone. Somebody knows my story. Somebody cares. And you just walk them through the next stage. You also normalize the event. Okay, I've just gone through the death of my husband, and we were married over 60 years. Mm. That was a dreadfully traumatic time. And it was so sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Does it makes sense to me that the first several months were really tough.
Yeah.
Okay, then by the time I get through all of the firsts in the first year,
yeah,
I feel I may be able to handle this because there won't be another first. We've gotten through the first Christmas, we've gotten through the first birthday, we've gotten through first Mother's Day. So if you can remind them, these are the stages of dreadful trauma. And you're managing very well, but be prepared for this, and I'll help you be prepared.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like with some good education and maybe even self-education, reading the books you've written or reading other resources or listening to podcasts, things like that, people in churches could be equipped to sit with people in the midst of their transition, in the midst of their heartache, of loss. Or you know, we just recently moved and we said goodbye to everyone and everything. And maybe they don't understand that fully, but if they'd be willing to sit and listen and follow up with missionaries, they can be a part of being a missionary provider.
That's a wonderful observation. And if you have connections with churches, that would be a strategy. Just invite them into the healing process. The problem is almost nobody in the local church will take the time to sit and listen. And then if they do take the time to sit and listen, the story probably won't make any sense to them. What do you mean you had to leave Congo and you had to leave the Mickey Mouse watch your grandpa gave you because you were evacuating so suddenly. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all had to move. There are things the church just doesn't get. And I respect them. We have good churches behind. But some education of these churches would be helpful. But you're so right, Cara. The relational aspect makes all the difference in the world. Somebody come alongside.
Yeah. So I think that kind of leads us to one of our last questions here. We do this podcast because we want to educate more and more people to be able to step into this role of missionary care.
Sure.
As much as they are able.
Sure.
And, you know, there are people all over the world listening and wanting to help and care for missionaries. So what are some kind of top resources that you would recommend, that people, books that they read or websites, or what resources would you recommend?
I think there are very, very good books. Very good books on resilience, very good books on missionary care. You know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we didn't have the array of resources that we have today. Uh-huh. Kelly O'Donnell has written some good things. Lois Dodds has written some good things. And there are conferences, good conferences, and they often have not only primary presentations, but little workshops around the edge. And I remember we were in Portland helping at a conference, and Dick had a little workshop helping parents of missionaries.
Uh-huh.
That was so neat. So there are a lot of resources, and then printed resources. I've got probably 500 articles and at least 40 on debriefing. So there are lots of resources available that were never there before. And there are resource people. One of the things I think for member care is build your network. You can feel very much alone, mm-hmm. but you need to have a whole array of specialists. You need to have a medical doctor in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. You need to have somebody specializing in anorexia, somebody who's helping with major transition, somebody who's helping with death and loss, somebody who's helping with abuse. You have an array. Don't expect yourself to know everything. We never will. Mm-hmm. But we know knowledgeable people that we can call on.
Okay.
And that's a great resource.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to say something that you didn't ask, because it seems quite important to me. And that is that the world is different today than it was 5 years ago mm-hmm. or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. The chaos that we see, the level of anger that we see, the softening of people, you shouldn't expect me to get along without that. There is a book written by a couple of men. One's a believer, called The Coddling of the American Mind. And we see around us expectations, and that's coupled with the advance of technology. And the downside of technology is they have enormous amount of information without commensurate experience.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They know a lot, but they really don't know it yet.
Right.
They know it in their head, but they haven't experienced it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're wanting to, let me say this differently. I think it would be a good thing if member care people made a good study of how did COVID impact people, missionaries on the field, getting ready to go to the field. How did it impact administrators to carry the extra burden of safety for their people? Mm. What has it done to families? And how does that impact missions? How can we do member care in a vastly different world? I think, let's see, I had made a little note to myself. The big issues of today have to do with political correctness, quickness to take offense, dealing with the offensiveness of the gospel, If you speak about Christ, you're offending somebody. Respecting difference, how to live according to God's word. And another issue, of course, is raising funds. Mm-hmm. That's harder today than it has ever been, because churches are overwhelmed. Uh-huh. They, you know, so much change is going on, and they've lost a generation of young people who will just as soon watch church on Zoom or where somewhere else. I can have my coffee and donut while I'm going to church. Churches are facing some pretty heavy duty stuff, but we need to help them, and we need to be very tuned in to what this current milieu looks like and what it will look like long term. And you touched, Cara, on resilience. I think resilience is increasingly being lost because we have a right to have what we need. So those are just some things.
Well, and I think everything you mentioned is a whole nother conversation. So we may have to come back to it.
Well, we'll be calling you up.
So anyway, sure. We're so grateful for your time and grateful for all the experiences that God has given you and your family that you've been able to draw on as you've ministered to other people.
Isn't that Jesus' example?
Yeah.
Look at my hands.
Yeah. Look at my hands. Look at my feet.
Look at my side.
Yeah.
It's a privilege to come alongside you. Mm. And I would just want to encourage you and bless you, because I think your ministry is very important.
Well, thank you
so much.
We look forward to being able to see you in person at an event, perhaps.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good. Bye.
So Steve, what did you take away from our conversation with Dr. Gardner today?
Well, I think the time we had with her was probably way too short, is what I think. I mean, just all the areas where she has expertise, the areas of just the experience she's had in her years of mission work and her relationship there. There's so many things we could, just the wealth of knowledge and her experience, but she has such a tender heart and a heart for people to do well.
Yeah. And I was just so encouraged that we can really think these things through well, and that with some equipment and training, hopefully our audience out there, there'd be mm-hmm. more people providing missionary care yeah. around the world. Mm-hmm. And I just hope and pray that today you heard something in our conversation with Dr. Gardner that would help spur you on and grow you in your pursuit of missionary care, because she really explained that well.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of great resources available for those that want to care well for their missionaries. And if your organization or your church wants to get more involved, we just encourage you to keep listening to the podcast, as well as start locating some of those resources we reference in each show.
So I hope you share this podcast with someone you think might want to learn more, and we hope you have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for the Innkeepers Podcast. Our mission at Sanctuary Inn is to equip, refresh, and restore God's global workers. We hope today's podcast was an encouragement to you, or maybe the podcast you heard today, you've been prompted to pass this along to someone you know that could benefit from today's conversation. Creating a podcast is a team effort. Cara and I prepare and do the interviews, and we're grateful for the time that our guests give us out of their busy lives to help us learn more about missionary care.
We want to thank Tim Downing for the music he wrote and performed for the Innkeepers Podcast. Tim is a very talented musician, and you can find out more about Tim at downingkeys.com. Our podcast is edited by Javier Bolanos, and our website and show notes are prepared by Micah Githens, my amazing husband. You can visit the Sanctuary Inn website to see more of Micah's great work at sanctuaryinn.org.
Thank you for joining us on our journey to learn more about missionary care.